Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Another women's football weekend has come and gone. We're here with all the stories from the weekend as Man City dominated their derby. Yes, Manchester turned blue. And Liverpool and Everton forgot to turn up for their game. Elsewhere, Chelsea kept the pressure on and Arsenal beat Aston Villa. But the game of the weekend, I think it may be at Leicester's King Power Stadium. Just a 5-goal thriller. We review all of that and also look ahead to the Conti Cup final this weekend. Right, Rach, before we get stuck in to the wild weekend that is Women's Football Weekend, let me have your moments.
I just realised as you stopped the intro, I was like, oh God, I need a moment. What's my moment?
I can hand you a moment if you'd like.
Well, look, I think I'll probably get told off for this because not only was it offside, but there was a handball. But I think it's probably Stina Ballerina Blackstenius's ridiculous goal. It kind of summed up all the chaos. Yeah, and the kind of referee chat that had already been happening at that weekend. For that to happen and get missed... and be finished with like 3 nutmegs, by the way, was the most chaotic thing I've seen.
Can you please read out the tweet that you've seen on social media taking the absolute mockery and piss out of this, please?
I've seen so many hilarious tweets on TikTok, and it is a picture of Aston Villa manager Carla Ward. Hi, Carla. Speaking into her walkie-talkie because she was up in a box because she wasn't well. And given the situation with the players and the very few that they have, I think they had 12 warming up or 12 in training that week. So she was being very cautious. It is a picture of her in her little box speaking into her WhatsApp saying, or walkie-talkie saying, did Blackstenius actually just eat shit and then get up and nutmeg our keeper? Over. It's the over at the end of it for me.
I just
over.
It looks so tragic, sort of like she was watching on for this like lovely bird's eye view, and obviously, you know, the concern for the players, making sure they're not ill. We're getting into the sort of business end of the season, like bless her. But yeah, that was to have to watch that from that kind of great vantage point must have been pretty killer.
Do you know what you could probably see up there? The offside and the handball. like everybody else in the studio.
Well, we'll get stuck into the refereeing decisions in a second. I've got a couple of moments for the weekend.
Go on.
The first one was Serena at the Man City Man United
having
game.
Having a whale of a time.
Looking her absolutely fabulous best. I mean, she had this gorgeous camel coat on, these stunning sunglasses. I don't know where they're from. Very vintage type vibes. I was like, honey, you're definitely going on Vogue. The Vogue cover is calling for you.
She was having fun as well.
Yeah, and she was just laughing and joking. I really rated that. And she was like, yeah, cool. We've got a bit of a chill summer coming up. Like, yeah, I'm going to get out my summer wardrobe. It was like a spring
it's,
vibe.
It's spring,
like,
guys.
Yeah, it was a really nice moment. And my second one was Sky Sports doing Aoife Mannion so dirty by panning over to her as she was about to come on as a sub for Jade Riviero. And then Jade was like carried on playing on. But Aoife Mannion was literally cramming biscuits into her face because she hadn't appreciated
she was going to be called on as a sub.
Ginger
nut snaps or something like
there
that.
There was something
well.
Like that. But
and
even the
still,
comms commented
oh,
on it.
She still had like the majority of one in her mouth and she put another one in.
It was that.
I was like, you do you, girl. And that also makes me feel better about eating biscuits.
Oh,
because
100%.
If an elite athlete about to step on the pitch can scoff some bickies, I can.
If Aoife can do it, we all can.
Well, then it's not as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just thought that was a really nice thing to pan to. I was like, yeah, cool girl. Right, let's get stuck into the Manchester United Man City derby. I called it, didn't I? I said, I feel validated in my concerns from last pod.
Sure.
I said the West Ham Chelsea game was going to be the one that was going to cause a little bit of tension, and the Man City Man United derby, unfortunately for me, is going to be, it's going to go one way. And it did. 3-1. At the Etihad, United boss Mark Skinner bemoans the lack of VAR after the game, after Bunny Shaw was not ruled offside for City's opener. In a derby, it swings the whole game.
I'd be annoyed, right? Fair enough. But I think the fact that in 8 minutes,
three.
City had the ball on the back of the net three times in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
One of the second one was correctly called offside. But the fact is, the game had kind of shifted. And I feel like even if they had called that offside, there was a Jess Park shot moments before that Mary Earps dived and saved.
Yeah.
And that was almost the spark that Man City needed. So I feel like even if that hadn't been given, Man City had turned the game. I think Man United had not taken their opportunity in the opening 20 minutes where they were pressing really well.
Absolutely.
Showing that they actually do know how to press.
Yeah.
They just weren't making the right decisions at the right time. And that's been their problem this season, is that they go forward, they create chances of sorts, but they're never good quality chances.
Yeah.
They don't get them on target. They don't test the goalkeeper enough. I've said this already, you know, a couple of times since the game that, and I think I said it on our live the next day, but like Alana Kennedy came in so late, and you would think as a team, as a manager, you'd be like, right, we need to target her. Mm-hmm. She's going to have, you know, take her a couple of minutes to get into it. She's been pulled in last minute to start the game.
Yep.
And she did take a while to get into it. They should have capitalised and they didn't. And I think once that 20 minutes passed and Man City had ridden that early storm, the game just shifted. Man United were better after they were 3-0 down.
Yes.
Which
but
is
then
a bit late.
I thought the first kind of 5 or 10 minutes, like you said, I think Man United almost kind of had, on balance, just the slight upper hand. Mm-hmm. I thought Jay-Z was looking very sprightly. I think she was causing all kinds of issues for Layla down the wings.
But end product.
And it's that. I felt like she was quite isolated in parts and there wasn't sort of enough to it. But I think, you know, Mark Skinner on one hand is going to complain about the sort of, you know, VAR type situation. But on the other hand, also, Blundell got away with an absolute stinker against Bunny Short. They could have been 10 people down. Mm-hmm. So you think, you know what, like, you've got to, it swings around about us, doesn't it, really?
It wasn't,
Mark,
the reason you lost.
Yeah.
You can be annoyed at it. Same with Rhian Skinner, you can be annoyed at it. It wasn't the reason you lost.
Absolutely. He did also say that they switched off for the other two goals. United are two goals away from conceding twice as many as last season.
Wow.
Do we think that's the root of their problems? It's a defensive one, essentially. Yep. But I think they were quite structured in the first. I think the first part of the first half, they were quite structured. I feel like both teams were set up, you know, defending well, limiting chances to a certain extent. But I thought, actually, that just kind of ebbed away.
Yeah, lapses in concentration, not feeling like you've got enough cover in the midfield. I think City dominated there. Jess Park was just riding challenges, bouncing off players and getting through far too easily through the midfield. And
Millie Turner done well to sort of quash Bunny Shaw's chances.
I think that's one of the areas, is I just don't feel like there's enough protection there. And then, yeah, they can switch off. And that's going to be hugely frustrating.
Well, it does mean they kind of slip down to fifth spot, which is not something I really want to talk about or dwell on.
Do you want to talk about instead Jess Park and Bunny Shaw?
Yeah, go on then. Let's completely divert our attention away.
Because then you don't have to be sad.
Okay.
Jess Park, unreal. Two goals, player of the match at the Etihad. Man City kid
in front of Serena,
unreal. And Bunny Shaw breaking records.
So Khadija Shaw, I don't know why her full names are there.
Because she deserves it.
She does deserve it.
Bunny Shaw.
Professor of goals, Khadija Shaw. Her 68th goal for City meant that she became their all-time record goal scorer in the WSL era, passing Georgia Stanners. I mean, she's an icon already. I mean, she's one of those figures that, you know, if you're going to get the ball to her, she's going to... It's very rare that she misses. Heading... striking. I mean, like, she's the full package.
Off the ball work.
The physicality. Yeah, she holds up play well. I mean, do we think that she is the difference this season in terms of kind of where Man City are at the top vying for their WSL title?
Having her fit has been so, so good for City. I think the relationship's now built as well with the players playing on the wing, whether it's Hemp or Kelly or Fowler, that's kind of settled now as well, which I think that consistency has helped. And yeah, I'm delighted for her. I'm delighted she got a goal. I feel like in the first half, she was desperate for the goal. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the second half kicked off, she was like, fuck it. Get out of my way. This is going in whether you're there or not.
I'm taking it.
Yeah.
This is my time to shine. I've waited for this all game. Yeah, I think her, but also, I mean, like we were saying sort of before, Jess Park as well. I mean, she had an absolute barnstormer. I think she's one of those nippy little players. She's an annoying player.
Centre of gravity.
Yeah, very, very much so. Like, and then she's very... game astute as well. Her game management is amazing. So I think even towards the latter stages of the game, she was sort of getting herself in positions, kind of creating those fouls, you know, delaying play, making sure that Man United didn't creep into their into the sort of second half. They obviously got the goal in the 73rd minute, and you were kind of thinking, okay, well, their fortunes can turn. And they did look like they were going to step things up a little bit. But she was very much kind of involved, not just in the playmaking situation, but also defensively, just like breaking the game up for them, making it difficult.
She reminds me a little bit of Kim Little. Do you know that kind
okay.
of low centre of gravity, can hold up players really yep. well, reads the game really well.
Absolutely.
And for a player of her age to give me that vibe already is a bit ridiculous.
And the goals themselves,
yeah.
I mean, they were absolutely stunning. In the right place, in the right time. First touch finishes. Mary Epps had absolutely no chance. Her first two league goals for City in front
just
of Sazzy Weegs.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I did.
That is awful.
I've been thinking about that one for a while.
Put it back in your head. Never use it again.
I mean, she's got stern competition for the England place from Ella Toon, Fran Kirby, Lauren James and Glace?
Who's Glace? She?
Glace Crinton.
Glace? I've never heard of her.
Yeah, she's a newcomer.
No way. Plays abroad.
But what do we think it is about her that kind of sets her apart? Or do we think it's that low centre of gravity, the kind of ability to break up play? I mean, how old is she? She's too young.
She's like 20
Yeah,
or
she's like half our age. And yeah, I just think like her and Kiara Keaton
22.
As well. 22.
God almighty.
My God, I could be a mum. Could I be a mum?
We're trying to keep it positive. What is wrong with you?
I don't think I could be a mum. No, okay, I'm not that old. All right, fine. But yeah, what do you think it is? Do you think she's got a better chance now? Do you think she's upped her profile with Serena so much so that she should be sort of starting to see more starts in the England setup as we come towards those kind of Euro qualifiers?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, she offers, it's another offering for England in that position, which I think is really good. Mm-hmm. I think the maturity that she plays with and the fact that she's stepped up, you know, playing arguably a different position than she had been. She's playing centrally. She's had to step up at a key moment in Manchester City's season. And she's delivering on the big stage as well. It's not just against teams lower down. She had an unreal game against Chelsea. Mm-hmm. She's had an unreal game against Man United at the Etihad in front of 40,000.
Big moments.
And those big moments are going to stand to her. It's going to help when it comes to big moments for England in terms of how she deals with the pressure. So it's another exciting prospect for England, I think. And she can play out wide. So, you know, she's quite a versatile player. We know Serena Wiegman likes that. And it's very valuable, I think. I think we're seeing an awful lot more versatility in players, particularly in the England squad as well. So the fact that she's bossing it in a different position is unreal.
These Gen Z players.
Ugh.
Christ.
We love you, really.
I know, we actually do. I mean, I've got so much love for, yeah, great... Grace Clinton.
You love her so much.
Kiara Keating. And Jess Park. I just think like they're the kind of like feisty new youngsters. They're like new era of England that we're going to see that's really exciting. The only thing I would say, Jess Park is very low key in her post-match interviews.
Oh, yes.
Very low key.
But they're so young and then performing in such big moments is the most exciting
but
thing.
But so chill and calm about
yeah,
it. Like you never see a nervous. They might make mistakes. Like Kiara's made a couple of mistakes and things like that. But you just think, she just, right, fine, it happened. Right, move on. But do you think a part of that maybe is in Gareth Taylor's leadership and management style, because he has said, I mean, previously to Ciara Keating, she was like, I do have the full, you know, respect and I have the confidence of the manager. Like when I make mistakes like that, he's like, yeah, just go again. We expect that's going to happen. You are young, but go out there and enjoy it. Do we think actually Gareth Taylor has that kind of maturity to say, actually, we're going to give you the chance. Even if you make mistakes, we're still going to believe in you.
Yeah. And actually, Chloe, it's something that we spoke about on our podcast last week.
Not us being experts.
And it's something that Gareth spoke to me about when I was in Amsterdam and I was doing that remote podcast with him. So guys, go back and listen if you haven't already. But yes, it is something that he touched on, that kind of decision to put Ciara in and also to give her the freedom to make mistakes. And mm-hmm. I think that's what's going to stand to them when they then go up into that senior level and play on the big stage for England. And I think, you know, when we saw for many years England struggling to get through semi-finals, it was always like they kind of choked on the big stage.
Yep.
And I think having these youngsters coming in who are playing for top clubs, performing at top level,
confident
in big games,
enjoying themselves,
it's going to be so valuable for England when they get into those big moments. So it's terribly exciting.
Well, I cannot wait to see all of them in an England, in the new England shirt. Yeah, that controversial St George's Cross coloured shirt. We won't get into that debate.
Don't. You're not allowed to use any other colour.
Because
ever.
It gets a bit political.
Because of the gaze.
And I just think there's a lot more in the world going on right
Jesus
now.
Jesus wept.
This was City's 11th league win in a row. But Chelsea's win over West Ham means they're top of the league on goal difference alone. Rach, we kind of ask this every week. We're getting to the business end of the season. Who's going to win it? 43 points apiece between Chelsea and Man City. Chelsea have 36 goal difference. Man City have 34. It is so tight now. So what? Tight.
That's why they're raging about that on goal. Every goal matters. I'm sticking with what I said originally. I'm sticking with Chelsea. It's a really tough decision. I just think when they've got their noses in front and they have it by a centimetre in front.
Lucky, though.
Yeah, but
off the back of this weekend.
This is
we'll
the
get
thing
into this.
About Chelsea in this window of the league, of the season, they can just grind out results. Even when they're playing a friggin' every 3 days, they're knackered, they're still able to pull out results, they're still able to pull out performances.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
Oh, that's fine.
But we will get
you
back
did
onto
ask,
that.
You did ask my opinion, Chloe.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I want your opinion, but only if you agree with me.
I'll give it to you.
I actually think Man City are going to do it. I think there's a belief in Man City that
I
they're going
to
over. And I think when you look at the fact, I mean, Chelsea have got to play Man United at the end of the season. That is the last game of the season.
City
I
have
think,
to play Arsenal?
Yes, but I have more belief in that because I think with Man United, I think there's a kind of like, they're not going to win over the league. They're out of the, apart from the FA Cup, they're sort of,
Never beaten Chelsea.
Never beaten Chelsea, but I think they've got it in them for that draw. Because that in itself is an accolade. If you're coming towards the end of the season and you've dictated whether Chelsea win their fifth consecutive title and that comes down to you putting a barrier there, I think 100%.
That's going to be on the board in the dressing room, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, you can have like honours, a Conti Cup, trophy, FA Cup, you know, league wins, whatever it is.
Ruined
Emma
Hayes' last season.
Yeah, 2024, stop Chelsea. Right. Elsewhere, the Merseyside Derby finished 0-0.
And that's it. Let's move on to the next
well,
game.
Okay, and the rest of women's football weekend. Right, Liverpool haven't beaten their neighbours since 2019 and probably should have been a little bit more assertive in this one. It was a very scrappy affair. I think, Rach, you kind of hit the nail on the head there that it wasn't the most exciting fixture to watch, despite the big hype about it being quite, you know, this big rivalry. Yeah, it wasn't what we kind of expected it would be.
No, the first half was really scrappy. There was loads of like niggly fouls or players going down injured. There was loads of injuries. I feel like the first half, the people who had the most to do with the physios,
mm-hmm.
Whether they were all legit injuries, whether they were tactical timeouts,
yep.
Maybe a combination of the two. But then it just felt like made it really difficult for either team to kind of assert themselves in the game and kind of implement any sort of game plan because it was so bitty. And there was no real rhythm. Second half, though, I thought Everton edged it.
Yep.
Probably would have brought Piemonte on a bit earlier because she made a real difference when she came on. But I think that's what Brian Sorensen wanted to do, was to try and hold Liverpool off for the first half and then see if they could get something out of it, because they were definitely more attacking in the second half. Players like Heather Payne, Aurora Galli had more of an influence on the game as the game went on. So yeah, I think they're probably a little bit unlucky not to have gotten a goal. They did hit the underside of the crossbar. I think it was Lucy Hope shot. So on reflection, I think Brian Sorensen said he was pretty happy with the draw. But having watched the second half, he's like, oh, but we could have probably nicked it.
I think the game represented a missed opportunity for Liverpool.
For Liverpool, 100%.
I mean, it means that point means they jumped to fourth, which is obviously amazing, but it could have been a really good opportunity to put 3 points clear between themselves and Manchester United. And also increase the distance between them and Arsenal. It would have put them 6 points off of a Champions League spot, which is in itself, I think, is a massive accolade. But yeah, it was a bit kind of flat. Although despite that, there were 9,457 people in attendance. I think we were probably expecting a little bit better for the derby. I mean, Rach, you kind of mentioned some of the figures that were floating about on the Women's Football Weekend last year, sort of in and around sort of 20,000 for the Goodison Park fixture. But when asked about the attendance after the game, Brian Sorensen said, "I'm happy for everyone who showed up. I hope they had a really good time. Of course, we want to grow the game as much as we can. I don't have an answer as to why there wasn't more people there because it's Sunday, 1 p.m. There should be. I saw a lot of families in the stand, but I was just happy there was a good crowd and they created a good atmosphere."
Probably budget.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked a little bit briefly, sort of a behind the scenes chat on the Women's Football Weekend and sort of, you know, some of the marketing around it. It was sort of very interesting. You had these kind of, you know, big icons, iconic statues and things like that.
AI.
You know, landmarks, a lot of AI used. These kind of like, the graphics were amazing. But in terms of the activation, I think I didn't see as much as maybe I had done in previous Women's Football Weekends. And, you know, like we sort of talked about a little bit before, it sort of stems from the fact that there's no men's fixtures. There wasn't international fixture. There was the England-Brazil game that happened on Saturday night. But it didn't feel like there was the same hype around Women's Football Weekend. And do we think it needs a bit of a rejig, maybe?
It didn't feel like there was as much media coverage as we've seen in the past or as much hype made about it. You know, we talked about it being less about, oh, you don't have a men's game to go to, so come to the women's game kind of language, and more about there's this derby at the main stadium. Like, it's going to be unreal.
Let's move away from the lazy narratives.
Yeah, come see it. Like, it's going to be really exciting. What colour? Is it going to be blue? Is it going to be red? Whatever it might be. And they're great opportunities. And I think we should do that when there are opportunities to use the main stadium. They should be. That's exciting. But we also talked about, like, you know, we've talked about this around other things as well, like our expectations, what we want to see versus the reality versus how long things take to grow. You know, the game has been on this massive upward trajectory, and it's a hard trajectory to sustain, right? Like, we're not always going to be skyrocketing trajectory. We've had come off the back of two major tournaments. We don't have a major tournament to look forward to in the summer. There are going to be plateaus here and there.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, our expectation to think the game is just going to keep growing at this incredible rate, like, it's not. But there are going to be times maybe where we're not always going to sell out crowds. We're not always going to break records, you know. And, the WSL has already broken attendance records, I think, maybe a week or two ago. It's surpassed the most it's ever gone to the WSL games. So, yeah, I think we just, it happens. I don't think it's a huge thing. I don't think it's an indicator necessarily of anything. I wouldn't get, like, overly stressed about it.
No, I think it's, we've had moments where there have been Women's Football Weekends throughout the season, in a way. We've had those kind of, like, big, you know, monumental fixtures. We've had those kind of, you know, derby days and things like that on other weekends. And it just hasn't felt like Women's Football Weekend is, like, the pivot of the season that we all need to kind of look towards now. We have those in peaks and troughs throughout the season.
Didn't feel like the clubs,
quite nice.
Yeah, it didn't feel like the clubs massively bought into it in the same way they had in the past.
Yeah.
So.
But is it, do they need to?
Yeah, is it that big a deal? I think if you're only going to play in your main stadium once or twice, you should make an effort to make it an occasion. And again, it doesn't have to be, there's no men's football, so come watch women's. It can be about the derby or about the fixture in itself. But yeah, like I said, I wouldn't kind of, I don't think it's that deep.
It's not that big a deal. It's not that big a deal. It's like the things on the back of the shirts, you know, it's not that big a deal.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The rest of women's football weekend, Brighton beat Leicester 3-2 in a cracking game at the King Power Stadium. All five goals came in the second half, with Elizabeth Turland's winner for Brighton coming a minute after Petterman equalised for Leicester. Both keepers, Kopp and Bagley, were excellent. If you want a goalkeeping masterclass, go on to the YouTube highlights of this game, look at the highlights of the first half, and you will see some beautiful, beautiful technique. One-on-ones, point-blank range shots, long-range shots, saves from set pieces, setting up walls. You literally, there was 32 shots in this game, 15 of them on target. You are going to see two absolutely outstanding goalkeepers doing absolute business in this game. I mean, I don't want to make the whole section about goalkeeping, obviously.
Sure you do.
I mean, I kind of want to, yeah. But getting on to kind of the outfield play a little bit more. I mean, for me, I felt like the initial better chances came from Brighton. I thought they looked a little bit more sprightly.
Sarri had a couple.
She had a couple. Lasada had a couple. Turland as well in the sort of first half. So I thought the game was sort of edging towards Brighton. And then Leicester kind of seemed to creep into their own a little bit more. There was Rantala. Obviously, she got the opener in the 54th minute. But it was kind of balanced. There were shots either way. I thought it was going to go to Brighton. Then I thought it was going to go to Leicester. And then eventually it goes to Brighton. It was one of those, a bit of a topsy-turvy game.
I'm really impressed with Brighton because I have not been impressed with them for a while. I don't feel like, and it's weird, I've seen a few tweets here and there about Brighton and how much they've been growing and improving. I actually disagree. I don't think they have been over the last few games. But this game was a massive improvement. They'd struggled in the past to be creative, to find players like Turland, and actually they're doing that really well. Sarri played really well. Katie Robinson played really well. So I was really impressed with that, especially, well, not especially against a team like Leicester. I do think, you know, Sophie was saying this to me, that Leicester are kind of set up to attack. So they're kind of a team that you can exploit if you can find your forward players. I think Brighton were able to do that very well, which is probably why they edged it. So really impressed with their attacking play, the amount of chances they created. I'm really intrigued to see how they take on, I think it's West Ham next week, big game, and whether they can sustain that kind of play, because we know West Ham are difficult to break down. So I'm intrigued. A little bit disappointed in Leicester, I think.
Okay.
Just purely because it felt like, you know, they started the season so well. They played well against Tottenham, a really tight game last weekend. So I kind of thought Leicester were going to edge it because they have goals in them. So I was maybe a little bit surprised. But then just second half was bloody chaotic, Chloe. Like, everyone was just like, forget the defending.
Well, it kind of felt like everyone got a bit tired and the sort of the gaps opened up and the sort of chances started to flow a little bit better. And I think that's where the goals started to come from. You know, mistakes were happening. People weren't being picked up. The game was opening up. And I think that's what made it so exciting in the second
really
half.
Really stretched.
So I'd say, what's the first half of the goalkeeping masterclass and what's the second half for
all the goals?
For all the goals. But yeah, I mean, it's been a turbulent time for both teams. Obviously, both of them have kind of out of managers. Leicester manager Willie Kirk still absent at the moment, and obviously Brighton.
Oh gosh, yeah, it was the managerless derby.
Yeah, it was kind of like a...
I forgot about that.
Be free to do whatever you want this...
Yeah,
this...
go wild, lads.
Yeah, it's your women's football weekend. You can dictate the strategy. Right, Arsenal...
That's really disrespectful to the managers who have stepped in. Like, we do not think you're not doing anything.
Absolutely not.
Great job, well done.
It was a, yeah, it was a very tongue-in-cheek joke.
Sorry.
Please don't come at us. Arsenal kept up their WSL title chase with a 3-1 will
at Aston Villa.
Yeah, they willed themselves to win that game.
On Sunday, in true Arsenal style. And I think when I saw this news come through, I thought it was fake news. I thought it was Twitter popping off and taking the piss.
Oh my God, absolutely fake news.
Kickoff was embarrassingly delayed again, this time by 45 minutes after Arsenal were caught in traffic.
Okay, in Arsenal's defence, they don't like predict what's going to happen on the M1. A truck overturned on the M40. And everyone was funneled into the M1. And as someone who has spent too much time on the M1 in the last 2 days, there are also 15 miles of roadworks. So if you're funneling like double the amount of traffic through there, it's going to cause absolute chaos.
It all just seems a bit suspicious to me. Do you remember that time that Arsenal were caught on a runway and the plane set on fire? Like, I just feel like they have these excuses in the bank. Like, this
is them, or is someone trying to take them down? I would start to worry. I
better take them down from what? Like, as in, like, what are they at risk of having?
I'm just going to mess with your preparation. I'm just going to slowly annoy you until you lose games.
It clearly isn't working for this particular game, although it did kind of.
I mean it
the
did.
The first part. Of the game, I thought, yeah, Aston Villa, again, another team, I love this word, looking very sprightly, very energetic.
Good game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, but there were times that I thought Aston Villa were kind of getting it. They needed to settle because they were just, as soon as they were getting it back, they were kind of launching it long to Leon. Leon was kind of doing their best, but again, sort of fairly isolated in parts, not able to sort of create that many chances. And we were sort of saying, I mean, the stats sort of popped up in the first 15 minutes. Yeah, I love the stats came up.
I shared these in a WhatsApp group 30 seconds before their goal. And okay. It was just like 0-0-0-0. In Aston Villa's column.
Literally that. I mean, there were 30 passes in the final third for Arsenal in the first 15 minutes. Yeah, and it just kind of felt like... And then the 26th minute, another stat popped up. Rachel Daly had one touch in the opposition half. So you're thinking, this game is all one-way traffic. And then up pops, like it was, up flies... Ebony Salmon
leaps
this beautiful one-touch strike, rolls into the bottom corner from no possession at all, just out of nowhere.
I think that's how Carlo Ward set them up, though, was to be defensively solid, not to give them much time on the ball. They, you know, everyone knows how frustrated Arsenal get when they can't break down a low block, which they really struggle with. And she probably knew that Arsenal would just keep trying to do the same thing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to wait for that one moment, because this is the thing about Arsenal this season, is those moments come.
They switched off defensively.
They make a mistake at the back and they concede a goal. And, you know, a lot of teams will go into games with Arsenal now saying, we will get a moment.
Just wait.
And we just need to be clinical. So the fact that Aston Villa created one shot, that one shot was on target and that one shot gave them a goal is ridiculous. I think they had one corner and like zero fouls or one foul or something.
100%
like,
success rate, Hans.
And then when you look conversely at Arsenal statistics, it's just like a completely different, like 37 shots, I want to say, which is absolutely ridiculous. 13 of them, I think, on target. The second half, though, I think they were punished for this playing out from the back business.
Absolutely. But just on the Arsenal attack, do you think, I mean, we talk so much about the variety of the different attacking combinations, you know, how easy it is for Idaval just to sort of pull on a Blastinius, take off Mornham, to, you know, bring on Russo. You know, I feel like there's so much variety in that. To get 37 shots and to not have scored is not acceptable.
No, and I still also think when you look at the setup, like that team, I think would have done well against Chelsea. And I think the team they chose for Chelsea would have done better against Aston Villa, because Blackstenius is better at getting between the lines when a team are playing a defensive, like a low block.
Yeah.
So sometimes you kind of wonder about whether the right players are being chosen at the right time. I do think when she came on, Arsenal were better in the second half.
Right.
You know, and you felt like a goal was coming. They hit the bar twice. So that's not included in their...
Absolutely.
30, whatever.
The press 13. Was outstanding.
Press was so much better in the second half.
Yeah.
I just think there is a lack of confidence. There's a fear of missing. There's like a fear, I don't know, failure, whatever it is.
What I did really rate, though, was the fact that I think it was Lotta Wibben-Moy who conceded the goal. I don't think she was the one who was supposed to be picking up Ebony Salmon. And then she comes up, not comes on, but then the second half, she's the one who then sort of redeems herself with that incredible header.
And she'd hit the bar as well.
I just think like there's a passion in Lotta. Like she might make a mistake, but she would do her absolute damned hardest to get everything back for the team.
And they're the players that you need to draw on those moments, because I just feel like there's a bit of a lack of urgency sometimes as well. And, you know, it's players like that that are going to say, take the game by the scruff of the neck a little bit.
Absolutely.
I thought it was Russo dropped deep, Blackstenius came on, looked even more dangerous, got two more goals after that. 3-1.
What's going on at Villa then?
Carla Ward said she had 12 players in training this mm-hmm. week. Illness, injury, contrary to what many might think, budget not brilliant. I think they're doing better than anyone thought they would at the beginning of the season. Everyone thought Carla should get the sack. They're all the way down the bottom of the table, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're pushing now for sixth. I don't know whether they will get sixth, but I think if we thought before the end of the season that Villa would finish on six in the top six,
absolutely not.
You'd think fine. I think the context around the number of players that they've been missing. Obviously, Van Domselaar was out injured. Anna Lee between the sticks, who was unreal, by the way.
Oh my God. Can we just give a massive shout out to Lee? It was save after save after save. And even though there's some amazing emergency defending from the Villa defence, I just think like she was one of the biggest reasons that they managed to keep Arsenal at bay to get that, the winners, until what, the 86th minute, 85th minute or whatever it was. So yeah, it was just another, go and have a look at the first half of the other game. Go and have a look at Lee. Just clips of Lee. I mean, I kind of
thought... She is elite.
Oh, wow.
That was good, wasn't it?
Oh, my God,
that
wow.
just came to me as well. That's not like your weird Serena Wiegmann name.
Sazzy Viegs?
No.
That will take off.
It won't.
Hashtag Sazzy Viegs.
Don't do it.
You heard it here first. I've got to agree with you. If you'd have said, yeah, Aston Villa are going to be seventh right now, I'd have said, absolutely not. They've got a very good chance of going back into the Championship. But here we are. Almost over half a season later, we've got a few games left. It's getting to the business end, and they're doing the business.
I believed.
You did believe?
I did.
I didn't, and I feel very ashamed of myself. I do apologise, Aston Villa. Right, Chelsea's big week. They are in the hot seat at the moment across all four competitions, doing their absolute best to field absolutely everyone with numerous injuries. They host Ajax. They host Ajax in the return fixture of their Champions League quarterfinal after their 3-0 win last week. If Chelsea win, they'll play either Barcelona or Bran. Barcelona lead that tie 2-1 after the first leg. Then it could be Lyon versus PSG in the other semi final.
Could be, by the way. I'm rooting for Hacken. You know, 2-1 for both of those teams. Can we just, another thing, guys, just get a list out because there's another thing you're going to have to watch.
Go on.
The goal scored by Bran and the celebration by the player. She could not believe she had scored a goal against Barcelona.
Took us through it.
It is just one. It was really good. It was a really good cross. Just missed out on the defenders, couldn't reach it. And literally she came in from the right post, just got to the ball, such a tight angle, and managed to put it past the goalkeeper. And like, she's like, hands on her head. She's just like, oh my God, what have I just done?
Put that on the CV.
Dead impressed with them. Like Barcelona, not totally at the races, I think. But also like just Bran in general, their fans are unreal. The noise throughout the game. I got to go and see them play against Slavia Praha this season. And it was such a fun atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And also the Ajax game, the Chelsea Ajax game, really well played game by Chelsea. Was very impressed with them to be able to pull out a performance like that when they're playing like every 3 days or something. But also just the stadium, the fans, the vibe. It was a really, really enjoyable night. Beautiful stadium. The Johan Cruyff Arena is so nice.
I've never been.
Oh, I was there when I lived there 10 and 12 years ago. I got to go and see Ajax men play when everyone called it the Balmar Arena. But it is a lovely, lovely stadium. And it was a really good night. So yeah, coming back 3-0. They're going to be very happy with that. But as Emma Hayes said, they cannot be complacent.
Absolutely not.
And they have to put the game to bed on Wednesday night.
I think the obvious benefit is that you're playing at Stamford Bridge in front of your own crowd. They do really well at Stamford Bridge. Lauren James
will score.
Does really well at Stamford Bridge. So if they make it through, which it looks on balance like they will, but again, not being complacent about it. The semi-final first legs will be on the 20th of April and then the second leg will be on the 27th of April.
And it's away, then it's home.
Yes. And it's going to be, a Chelsea-Barca semi-final
again
is going to be a pretty harrowing prospect, I think, for Hayes. That is the one thing that she does want this year.
But I think if you're going to play Barcelona, she would probably rather play them across two legs than one.
In one big final.
Because, and I've said this before, I think Emma Hayes does well. She learns from the first game and tends to perform better in the second, generally. So I think, yeah. But at the same time, they still have to beat Ajax and Barca still have to beat Bran. So let's not get ahead of ourselves.
There's a lot of if, buts and maybes, I agree. Chelsea also face Arsenal in the Conti Cup final this Sunday at Wolves Molineux Stadium in a repeat of last year's final. Chelsea beat West Ham 2-0 with West Ham the victims of poor officiating again. Hayashi incorrectly flagged offside as she scored their equaliser.
Beautiful goal as well.
I mean, wasn't it just? Rhianne Skinner, not very happy about the whole situation, and rightly so. She said she's getting a bit sick of the incorrect decisions. She mentioned goals that Liverpool and Tottenham have scored against them in recent weeks that shouldn't have counted. Rach, what were your thoughts? It's a tough one with the kind of... I absolutely understand and absolutely agree that that was not an offside. That should have stood as a goal. That would have changed the whole dynamic of the game. It could have ended up with Chelsea going drawing against West Ham, which is kind of something that I kind of felt was on the cards, because West Ham do obviously pose a threat to kind of the top four contenders. And you think about decisions like that, it's not just a decision in this game, it's what it actually means, because Chelsea have got those additional 2 points that they otherwise probably wouldn't have got had that goal stood. That affects how the league potentially plays out. That affects whether Chelsea potentially win the league. And I'd be fuming if I was Man City, because I'm thinking that could be the difference. That one decision could be the difference between who takes the title.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, with the Manchester goal that shouldn't have been allowed. Yes, it does impact the game. I don't think it necessarily completely determines the entire outcome of the game, but I think in terms of momentum, because of the timing of that disallowed goal, West Ham did then go on and have a number of really key chances that they should have scored. And I feel like mentality-wise and mindset-wise, had they scored that one, they would have, I don't know, been in a much better position in front of goal to feel confident in scoring. Whereas I feel like when that goal gets pulled back and you know you should be ahead and you could be ahead, you start snatching at things.
Yep.
And I do think that kind of decision could affect, you know, future opportunities. Because it's not like West Ham had one chance.
Mm-hmm.
They had multiple chances, and I feel like had that one been allowed, it could have swayed things a little bit. So I can understand her being frustrated, especially when, as she said, there's been a number of games where they could have got a point or 3 points, and it'll be a very different story for them in the table. So I can understand her being really frustrated. And I think as well, the any of these decisions on their own in a weekend probably wouldn't cause as much controversy, right? We'd still talk about that decision. We'd probably still talk about the Bunny Shaw offside, or we would definitely talk about the Stina Blackstenius goal. But when you see all of those things happen in one weekend, I can really understand the frustration. You know, Russo should have had a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a couple of things in other games as well that got missed. And I think that just kind of adds to the frustration, and I think she needed to let it out. So she's not wrong.
No. I think I did really feel for them, because I think on balance they deserved that draw. I think they battled hard enough. I think they put Chelsea to task. And there was a part of me that really wanted them to actually get the win. And it looked like it was going that way. But then I think it's, we talk about, you know, Chelsea and the squad depth and things like that. And obviously they've got a number of injuries. But then when you look at kind of who Emma Hayes is able to bring on to finish a game. I mean, I think the 61st minute, Ramirez and Kirby, who made a 200th appearance for Chelsea. They replaced Aggie Beaver-Jones and Lauren James. Within sort of 3 minutes, I think Ramirez was immediately causing issues. I think there was about three good chances in the space of, you know, 2 or 3 minutes or so. It just felt like they always have these super subs to kind of bring home the game. It always feels like they sort of ramp up. Then it gets to the 60th or 70th minute and Emma Hayes is like, right, well, cool. Let's bring everyone on. Let's just absolutely go. Let's throw the kitchen sink at it. And I think it's a good way of also preserving those players and their minutes. I think it's a good sort of use of rotation, but it's so dangerous.
Brighton, Cuthbert, Ramirez, Kirby, Macario to bring off the bench.
It's just like West Ham do so well. And can you imagine the thought process that you're like, oh, we might even snatch a win out of here. We might actually cause an upset. And then all of a sudden you can see like Ramirez warming up and you're like, it's how teams feel, I suppose, when you sort of see like, I don't know, who else?
Do you remember during the Euros and Serena Wiegmann at pretty much the same time every game would make those substitutes? I can just imagine teams being like, oh God, I knew it was coming.
Well, we had a good run.
I knew it was coming. And still they're going to win.
Well, Chelsea have featured in each of the last four Conti Cup finals, but have lost the last two, 3-1 against Arsenal last year. What are your predictions? Where do you think the game will be won and lost for this?
I think this is a really hard one to call because of Arsenal's inconsistency. Mm-hmm. You know, both teams spanked each other in the league.
Yep.
Dominant performances both times. Tactically, it's been, you know, wrong for both managers both times. So I think that's what makes it really hard to call, you know, factor in Chelsea having to do another Champions League game midweek and then come and do this first opportunity for silverware for Emma Hayes to get her hands on her first of potentially four trophies. So there's a lot riding on it. Arsenal, it's their only chance for a trophy.
Yep.
So there's a lot at stake for both teams. You know, it's for me, it's going to be won and lost on the starting who starts.
Okay.
And just the tactics, like obviously, it sounds really obvious, but like when these two meet, that's the thing. Someone just doesn't quite get the tactics right each time. Do you
know
what I mean? Someone messes
it
up each time. So it was Emma Hayes in the Conte Cup last time round. It was the same when they played the
Emirates
and then Jonas completely fumbled at a Stamford Bridge.
I think it's the biggest concern for me. I think Arsenal are going to put them to task, but I just think there's that the weakness in the defence. If the, it, like we were saying before,
oh, Chelsea have to still score.
It's those little moments. Yeah. It's that. So I think it's whether Arsenal are on have got their shooting boots on in the attack more than because I think they are vulnerable at moments.
And Chelsea are clinical.
I think it's that. It's just. If these things fall into place, we could have like a 5-4 type result if all this happens. But yeah, I mean, we saw even for the, I was having a look at the sort of analysis for the Arsenal Aston Villa game and that Ebony Salmon goal. And there were six players in the box. There were six defensive players in the Arsenal box. And there
not one of them was near Ebony Salmon.
Literally that. I mean, you even has Maz Pacheco like running in from the back post. No one was even picking her up either. So if Ebony Salmon hadn't taken it, Maz would have taken it all day. And you think, how can you, it just looked...
Head says
not
Chelsea, because I just think they're in the flow, they're in the groove.
Mm.
Heart says Arsenal because it's their only chance for a cup. And I think it's really important for them as a team this season to win something.
I agree. I'm going to go Arsenal. I just think it is so important for them. That is silverware is so important. And I just feel their attacking line is good enough to get the result done. I just really hope that they bank up when Chelsea... start flying at them. Thoughts and prayers with you, Arsenal. Thoughts and prayers. And please don't turn up late.
Come, just go the night before.
Yeah, just,
Jesus.
You know, go on time.
Bring all of your socks.
Start making your way up there.
Bring
on
an
Thursday.
Extra kit.
Yeah, yeah. Just train outside the stadium. Whatever you need to do, just get there. Please.
Knock on the neighbours' doors and see if you can stay there instead.
Otherwise, no Easter eggs for all of you. Thank you so much for listening. Rach, where are you heading off this weekend?
Well, first, I'm doing the game at Stamford Bridge.
Yes.
And then I'm doing Aston Villa on the Saturday.
Lovely.
And then I'm doing the Conte Cup final.
Very, very lovely.
You?
Are
you going to be on the couch with seven screens?
I am. I really like that vibe that you just got to sit there. I might have a beer, might have a couple of beers.
Do you know what?
Yeah?
I did it once when I was in Ireland and I'd gone home for something. And I just sitting there with so many screens. It's a lovely way to watch football.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just delightful.
Don't know what I'm doing, going pitch side and getting rained on.
Well, you chose that life, mate. You chose that life. Make sure you join us for a bonus episode on Thursday where we'll be joined by Queenie Porter, the Vice President of West Ham Women. We're chatting to her about the WSL's commercial growth and the challenges it still faces. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X/Twitter. I am at Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball and we are at Upfront_pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you on Thursday.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.